The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply. Nair is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air.
Locked behind glass cabinets or sitting in dusty basements in museums and art galleries across the world are over 16,000 taonga Māori. Looted, stolen, or traded in the early colonial period, the artefacts have spent the best part of the last two centuries far from the land that birthed them, the hands that crafted them, and the people who held them. However, more and more of our taonga are coming home. Just this week, 64 Māori and Moriori Koiwi were repatriated from Vienna's Natural History Museum, that's in Austria, to Te Papa, where they are welcomed back with a porphyry. A large majority of these Koiwi were stolen by an Austrian grave robber, Andreas Reiszczyk, in the mid to late 1800s. However, there are still many more, particularly Toi Moko or Moko Mokai, held overseas. There are several being held in the British Museum as we speak. These preserved heads were heavily traded during the early colonial period and seen as a prized possession. During the musket raids, slaves and prisoners were killed so that they could be turned into toi moko, and many iwi trying to obtain weapons to fight back against the colonialists offered toi moko of their enemies to European and American traders. It's truly wild and, to be honest, quite disturbing, a little bit sickening to think that this was only 200 years ago and that sadly the whereabouts of so many of these moko mokai are still not known, with many of them believed to be held in private collections. However, thanks to the mahi of the Karanga Aotearoa repatriation program, which was established by Te Papa in 2003, slowly but surely our ancestors and taonga are coming home. So far, the program has returned over 600 koiwi, toi moko and taonga to hapu and iwi. They're very slowly but surely being tracked down, their return negotiated, and then reunited with their descendants. Then there are also our taonga, mere pounamu, kākahu, korowai, taiaha, whakairo, that were also shipped across to the other side of the world. Hine mihi, which is one of the oldest surviving whānui in the world, built in 1880 in Te Wairua, sits on the Onslow family property in southeast England near Surrey. But just last month, it was agreed that carvings from Hine Mihi were to be brought home to the descendants of Hine Mihi in exchange for new carvings. It appears that every week there's a new news report about some of our taonga coming back from European museums. And from these reports, it would seem that maybe the tide is turning, that these cultural institutions are slowly rectifying the error of their ways and realising that the people whose taonga their ancestors stole should be back on their home soil. In light of the recent death of the Queen, there appears to be a growing societal awareness and, to be honest, disgust with the hoarding of Indigenous taonga in colonial European museums. And so after the break, we're honoured to be joined by two of those who have the enormous task of doing this mahi. So stay with us. Kia mau tonu mai. Tēnā rā tātou anō. We are absolutely honoured to be joined by two of the hard-working kaimahi at Te Papa who are bringing our taonga and koiwi home. So firstly, of Ngāti Awa, Tūhoi, Ngāti Makino, Ngā Pui and Te Aroha, we have Te Arikirangi Mamaku Ironside. He is the kaitohutohu koiwi tangata, the acting head of repatriation. And we're also joined by Amber Aranui of Ngāti Kahununu and Ngāti Tūwharitoa, who is a researcher for the Karanga Aotearoa Repatriation Program at Te Papa. Tēnā kōrua, nō mai haramaiki a ne.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
So briefly, I think it would be really helpful for those of us, including myself, who don't know a lot about the area that you both work in. I'd be starting with you, Amber. What is your mahi about with the Karanga Repatriation Program at Te Papa?
Kia ora, thank you. It's a very good question. I'd just sort of preface to say that I'm no longer in the program, but I was the researcher for Karanga Aotearoa Repatriation Program for maybe about 11 years. And so when I was doing that mahi, my role was to assist our small team of three to find out where our tupuna are around the world. And then to follow up on that research, so to find out how they got there, when they got there, who brought them there, and actually where they were taken from, so that we are then able to take them home to their people, their iwi, their whānau, their hapū.
Wow.
I think that mahi is a bit of detective work. I like to think of myself as a bit of a detective. and it's not easy. And it can take years sometimes to be able to find out the information you need to ensure that those tupuna go home to their people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, really keen to hear more about that process and how how it takes years to track down some of these taonga and koiwi. But we'll just quickly throw back to you, Te Arikirangi. So what does your role entail at Te Papa?
So I started with the program at Te Papa here in 2009, so just a couple of years after Amber had started. And we started at a very, very interesting time in our program that had actually started probably in 2003. And Karanga Aotearoa has four main kaupapa, and that's to undertake provenance research for tūpuna and foreign collections, and also identifying where they come from, but also to facilitate a negotiation process for these tūpuna to come home wherever they are, whether they be from institutions like museums, but also universities and anatomical anatomy departments at these universities there. And a big part of our kaupapa is to also negotiate and speak with iwi, hapu and whānau where these tūpuna come from, and provide them with all of the information that they require to make some decisions on how and when these tūpuna come home and where they actually go back to. And then the last main part for our program is to facilitate that physical repatriation there. And so all of the handover ceremonies, as well as all of the transport requirements, all of the freighting requirements. So for most of my time at Te Papa, it's just been around coordinating all of the logistics, working on the communications and some of the information management for our very, very, very small team, of which Amber played a very, very significant part of. And it's beautiful to see her evolve into another area, especially at Te Papa, and developing a framework for taonga and taonga repatriation.
So you're still at Te Papa, Amber, but you've just moved into a different part of the repatriation program?
No, I've moved into curatorial practice now, so the newest member of our Mātauranga Māori curatorial team, where we look after taonga, and a big part of the work that I'm doing within that team is one, to find out more about the taonga that we have and to try and reconnect them back to iwi, hapu and whānau, but also to help facilitate the return of significant taonga that are in our collections, and return them home too, which is amazing. Very similar mahi, it's just going from koiwi to taonga.
Mm.
Ka pai. And so just recently, as in, just this weekend gone, you were both involved with bringing back 64 of our Māori and Moriori ancestors. I'm going to start with you, Amber. Were you sort of part of the team which tracked down these tipuna, and how did you, where did that come about? My understanding, this has been 20 years in the making, so, you know, where did that begin?
These tipuna are part of a much larger number of tupuna that were, most of which were collected by Andreas Reischik. He was Austrian taxidermist by trade, and he has a very interesting story coming here to Aotearoa. He was actually only supposed to come for 2 years to help set up the Canterbury Museum and ended up staying for 12, much to the disappointment of his wife and newly born child. His story is, I think, for me, quite shocking, because he had a diary and he wrote down the things that he did. And so I think us here in Aotearoa have known about his escapades, maybe, for quite a number of years. So probably since the 1950s, actually, when parts of his diary were published in our local newspapers. And, you know, and that's when we found out that he had stolen well over 60, I think, tupuna, maybe in the hundreds, and sent them back to Austria initially to be part of the Imperial Museum collection there. And then, you know, some of those tupuna have ended up in the US, and luckily we've brought those home. And we've also done another repatriation. I can't remember when that was, Te Arakirangi, can you?
2015.
Oh, 2015, from the Ethnology Museum in Vienna. And so all of these tupuna all were part of that larger collection that he had amassed and sent over to Austria. And, you know, it was quite shocking to read the things that he did and the lengths that he went to obtain our tupuna and taonga to become part of the collection, and I guess to increase his status in Austria. And that was the perception at the time. Unfortunately, by the time he got back to Austria, the man who had promised him this status and this mana had died. And, yeah, so it's a bit of a sad story for him, or a bit of utu, I think.
Right.
in terms of what he did. And so, yeah, so we have known about this story for quite a long time, and it's only been probably in the last 7 or 8 years that countries like Austria have become open to having conversations with us about returning our tupuna. Prior to that, it was quite difficult to sometimes even get an answer from them once we emailed them. But Te Arakirangi will be able to talk to you more about that.
Yeah, what is that shift? Why do you think that? Because that kind of is how it appears from the outside, right, that there's quite a lot of our people coming home and taonga coming home. But why, I guess, in this case, were Austria all of a sudden open to negotiating the return of our people?
I don't think it's a matter of all of a sudden. You know, they were just hospitable towards Māori and our clan, for our tupuna to actually come home. And it has been a very, very steady, ongoing campaign that's actually gone through so many different generations of Māori. And, you know, even going far back to Queen Tarātarangi Kāhu, when she went over to Austria to retrieve Tupahu, the Toimokawhu of Tupahu, and take him back to Taupiri Maunga. So it even started even before that. But, you know, the interesting thing about the attitude for the government, which has shifted massively, is that there was a time when we went to Austria to uplift our tupuna, and part of the conditions for the return of Tupahu was that we weren't to ask for the rest of them back. You know, and that's the very, very crass nature of all of us. But, you know, the wheels really started turning in probably between 2009 and 2013. So in 2009, the Austrian government had initiated a research project into all of their collections of Kōiwi at the Natural History Museum as well as the Ethnographic Museum, to get a better understanding of the collectors associated, where they actually came from, with the expectation that for Māori anyway, we'd actually have a little bit more information and research and provenance around the Reischik, the tupuna that Reischik had stolen. But that wasn't actually the situation, and nothing actually really eventuated for Karanga Aotearoa, which had started in 2003 there. But I think it was in 2013, 2014, when Acting Kaihautū Rhonda Paku had gone over to Vienna to speak with both the Wout Museum Vienna and the Natural History Museum to actually start having that conversation again. And then in 2015, we were repatriated from the Ethnographic Museum, the Wout Museum, to Puna that Raishik had stolen from caves in Kafia. And these were the remains of, they were connected to Ngāti Hikairo around there. Very, 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 very sensitive. And so these collections, these recollections in Raishik's diaries that actually talk about the insidious nature of the theft and going into these and even bribing whānau, of these who knew where the wahitapu were to help him get access into those caves, and that's where it actually started from there. And so we managed to actually bring those back home in 2015, and then, you know, it's a huge whakapapa. It's a really, really large whakapapa story around how we actually got to what happened over last weekend on Sunday the 2nd of October. So 2017, two kaumātua from Tainui, Taki and Rātou Tūna, went with a small delegation from Te Papa, Te Rikiakia Herewini and Ngā Moana Parata, to speak with the Natural History Museum to hopefully move forward the wheels for them to actually release our tūpuna. And so that same year, they had a new head of international collections, Professor Dr. Sabine Eggers. And she's German by descent, but raised in Brazil. But, you know, like very, very, very well educated. And he paitana hanga, he ngākau maha ki tāna, because she actually encouraged the museum, the Natural History Museum, to undertake a research project to have a look again at Raishik's diaries, go through the transcripts, retranslate them again, because, you know, Raishik's son, who actually published the journals and also the book Yesterdays in Māori Land, which was the original source of information where Māori actually became aware of all of these, had a habit of sugarcoating all of that kōrero, all the practices of his papa. Mm. And as a result of that project that started in 2017, it actually provided a lot more context and paved the way for our tūpuna to actually come home. And then in 2020, in June 2020, the new director for the Natural History Museum signed, with the approval of the Austrian government, the return for these tūpuna to actually come home. So in a nutshell, That is the journey for these tūpuna. It hasn't been easy, and there have been a lot more people involved in this whole campaign that saw tomorrow. But, you know, we also had the kōrero after the pōhiri. We had a big breakfast and some speeches there, and we also mentioned whānauma. This is only halfway points. Our kaupapa isn't finished until these tūpuna are actually home with you and your wāhitapu and your urupa back home with their whānau. So, you know, there's a big process that we can talk about a little bit further on in the podcast. And Amber can also shed a lot of light there around what's involved.
Is there an expectation at the end of the institution that Te Papa or Aotearoa will pay to have our tūpuna back? Or is it understood that this is, you know, what they have to do to make up for an atrocity that was done?
When Karanga Aotearoa was being developed, the policy framework for Karanga Aotearoa actually had a few scopes and stipulations, and there was that we weren't able to use our funding to buy our tūpuna, because that wasn't appropriate. But our funding that we do actually get, and this is probably what's helped contribute towards the favourable attitude to release our tūpuna, to send them home. We approach them, we tell them that we have the government mandate and support of our hapu whānau and iwi, but we also let them know that we're only there to just talk about kō iwi and tūpuna and karapuna. Because once they, you know, if we approach them and say, it's like, oh, we're here for taonga as well, then they get a little bit nervous, ne?
Aye. Slippery slope.
Slippery slope. But it's kind of like a dangerous territory when you kind of like, you know, red flags start ringing for them. So, you know, like, you don't want that to happen. But we also, as another measure, tell them that, you know, if you if you do vote in favour of our claim and our request, then we will cover any and all costs associated with creating, reboxing, undertaking audits, export, import permits, freight, all of those logistics, and even as far as, and this is a very, very important part, even as far as sending over a delegation of kaumātua and tohunga, kia parai te huarai, kia tukunasi ngā karanga me ngā karakia, a mō rātou mā ko ngaro ki wāhi kē. And that's a really important part for our process, is that on the journey home, we need to make sure that our tikanga is correct.
Why are they reluctant?
Why shouldn't they be reluctant? You know, I think the museum attitudes, and I think Amber would actually talk about this a little bit more, is that, you know, like the attitudes for towards claims for repatriation of any part of the collections is this perceived risk, is that, you know, like, oh, if we give this back, you know, what sort of precedent is it gonna set for everything else that we have in our museum? And I was like, karema, you know, I think we're only really concerned about the stuff that's been stolen. But, you know, they don't see that. They see it as a existential risk. To their institutions and to their collections, which is kind of understandable, but it's not actually an excuse that actually really sticks these days. Nira Amber.
I think there's, for the most part, things are changing, attitudes are changing, but there's still the view that museums are going to be empty spaces, it's going to open the floodgates and everyone's going to be lining up to get all their taonga and their tūpuna back, which in a perfect world would be great, but, you know, in reality, that's just not how it is. There are those that are of the view that it's a loss to science to have our tūpuna returned and reburied, for that matter. It's a loss of knowledge. Places like, for instance, the British Museum, they see themselves as a universal museum, so they are there to tell the story of everybody. And so museums like that are of the view that it is their duty to retain taonga and, in some cases, tūpuna, whether it be Egyptian mummies or our own tūpuna, because it's their obligation to help the world, help teach the world about the history of man. So there is very differing views, I think, around the world about the role of museums and what the right thing to do is these days. But, you know, there's a whole lot of amazing Indigenous and allies to the Indigenous here that, I don't know, I guess are showing and teaching and educating the educated, is kind of what I like to say, that this is not scary. And in fact, it's a way to create really meaningful relationships with the people whose taonga that they hold, you know, no longer are, in my view, are curators, necessarily the holders of that knowledge. You know, the ones that know everything about specific taonga or about specific cultures, it's actually the people. Mm. You know, they are the ones with that mātauranga.
Aye.
And, yeah, so it's a really changing landscape, museums. You know, we're not the only ones that are active in this space. We have, you know, our whanaunga and Te Whenua Moemoea, who are also very active in this space. Our First Nations in the US and Canada, very active in this space. The Sami of Scandinavia, also very active in this space. And increasingly, our Ainu whānau in Japan, also becoming very active in this space as well. So, and Africa, the nations of Africa, you know, as we know, Benin Bronzes, you know, it's a very big kaupapa within the repatriation space at the moment. And so I think that critical mass is building, and museums are sort of understanding that it's not going to be a mass exodus of taonga from within their spaces, but, you know, it's an opportunity to right the wrongs of those past, of the past, you know, the theft, the pillage, you know, the murdering in the name of science, even if we want to go there, you know, and it's about building relationships and actually really learning about the taonga that are within these spaces, and getting that story firsthand from the people. So it's exciting.
There are a lot of shifts and changes that are happening in museums at the moment, and, you know, like, it's only been very, very recently that these positive movements have really happened. And, like, Amber touched on it earlier, and it's just all this understanding that, you know, curators and even institutions and museums themselves aren't, you know, they're not the fountains of knowledge that they considered themselves to be, and that a lot of that mātauranga about, you know, taonga and especially tūpuna exists within the communities. But, you know, the whole conversation around taonga and tūpuna within museum collections is also quite different, because tūpuna don't belong in institutions. Tūpuna don't belong disconnected from their whānau. So that it becomes a ethical question for institutions on weighing up the measures between, you know, the values to science and civilization in general, but also what they actually mean to the communities of origin there, and reconciling that. For Māorima, seems like a very, very logical way to actually think. It's like, no, they don't. They don't belong to science, especially in the situation when they're actually stolen and taken without permission. And this is one of the, actually, it's a shitty thing, especially with Reichshek. He knew what he was doing. He knew precisely what he was doing, and it was very, very calculated about how he went about it. And we know this because, you know, like, he even uses terms like tapu and understanding that, you know, like, these are tapu, and even making references in his journals that, you know, like, to his mates, saying, it's like, we can't be caught in daylight, otherwise we'll be killed. You know, and so they understood that this was, you know, right, punishable by death. But very, 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 very crafty, and Koroki also gave him permission to travel through the King Country. And that's on the back of the relationship that was established by two tūpuna from Waikato. They travelled over to Austria on the Novara. And then they came back with the printing press, and their printing press printed the Kingitanga's newspaper during the land wars. And so the Kingitanga thought quite highly of Austrians, and there was a level of trust there. And Andreas Reichshek capitalized on that, and, you know, and they went through their whenua, shot all their birds, and stole their tūpuna.
Wow. So that's quite an uncomfortable truth that I imagine you guys have to deal with as well, that it is, oftentimes it was Māori who traded the koiwi, and as you said, it was whānau Māori that tipped them off as to the location of some wahitapu. Is there a process once you bring people home to, I guess, whakatau with the tūpuna of the people who did the trading, as well as the descendants of the people who are receiving their ancestor home?
Yeah. It can quite often be as difficult to have those local negotiations as hard as it is to have the discussions with it, because it's a very, very confronting situation.
Aye.
But the whole kaupapa for our program anyway is reconciliation of the past, and inviting all of it. Because, you know, like, we know that some whānau also have nāwe amongst themselves and have to kind of go through a whole process and move through those at their own pace. We also respect that as well. And so it's not our imperative to pressure whānau up and iwi. Is like, we have your tūpuna, we brought them back, you need to take them back right now. You know, we'll help facilitate all of these discussions, and, you know, like, wherever we can mediate those discussions. But quite often it's up to whānau up and iwi to make those decisions, and it could take months or it could take years. But, you know, we're patient, because, you know, some of these claims with international institutions take, you know, 20 years, take 10 years.
It's very complex.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
A And what about, we talked a lot about koiwi, but what about taonga? I understand that, you know, there's obviously with particular taonga, say, if they're waka, they need particular conditions to be preserved in, and not all iwi and hapu have those facilities to maintain and preserve their taonga, you know, for generations to come. So how are those negotiations, what are they like, and how do you work with iwi and hapu who really want to bring their taonga home but might not have the facilities for them?
Yeah, that's a new realm that I'm entering. I'm also working with my own iwi to return a number of taonga belonging to a whare, and we're having those same discussions as well. It's hard because on the one hand, you know, you want to be able to ensure that these taonga are preserved for coming generations. But then at the same time, you know, is that the natural progression for taonga in general? Mm. And I personally don't know that we should be applying those pressures or making those conditions, you know, part of that return. Like, if we want to proactively preserve these taonga for generations to come, then I think by all means we should provide them with those skills, those, you know, the ability to do that, and whether that is, you know, training or providing services through some of the avenues that we have here at Te Papa, then definitely. But then I think there's some iwi who they may not necessarily see that as important. They just want the taonga back. They want to put it in their marae. Mm. And it lasts as long as it lasts. Mm. And we should be okay with that too. Yeah, so it's hard, that one, because I think it's kind of double-sided, and it depends on what that whānau and hapu want. You know, sometimes conditions of return, and that has come into play with koiwi too at times, is that they must be kept in a certain condition, otherwise we're not going to give them back. I don't really, personally, I don't think we should be putting that on to our whānau. If that's what they want, then we support them to do that. But we shouldn't make that a condition of return. And that's just my whakaaro. I don't know if all museum people would agree with that, but, you know.
Yeah, I'd agree with it, even as far as, you know, the role for our program anyway. He waka. He waka mātou mō ngā tūpuna kia hoki atu ki te wā kāinga. And so our waka goes as far as the marae, or go as far as wherever they want to have it. And then when we return the tūpuna back to their whānau hapu and iwi, it's completely up to them. It's entirely up to them around what they want to do or where they want to take their tūpuna. Some might want to take them back to the caves that they were taken from, or those situations that may not actually be safe, and so they might actually decide to take them somewhere else to an undisclosed location. So, you know, and that's, ko tā mātou ki he tautoko i ngā hiahia, i ngā wawate o te whānau. Yeah.
How many are still out there?
Ooh, that's a $1 million question there for them. We have a fair idea on what we find as we go. So as we move through all of these different countries, you know, take Germany for example, they'll see that we're active in one part of Germany, and then a museum that actually knows that they might actually have some, they'll come forward and they'll say, it's like, we actually, and Amber's come through this in so many different situations and going to conferences, and it's like, we actually have some human remains from New Zealand during this time, and we want to facilitate their journey home, which is fantastic, you know, and it works out quite well for us. And then we start through that whole process. But you know, at the moment we have on in the pipeline, if I could even use that term, about 400 to 500 koiwi and koiwi to bring back.
Wow.
And those are the ones that we know about.
We know
that
about,
doesn't include, Amber knows, that doesn't include private collections.
Who are the ones that are holding out on you? Who have you reached out to that has said, absolutely not, you can't have these back?
I'm not going to dig that hole.
Oh, come on. Name and shame.
No, because we actually are in delicate discussions with them. But, you know, I do want
some international relations issues.
You're going to cause a political incident. But no, you know, like in the United Kingdom, we have had made a lot of progress with large and very, very prestigious institutions, the Natural History Museum in London, the Pitt Rivers Museum at Oxford University, Wellcome Trust, the University College of Surgeons, Trinity College. So all of those places, and even in Germany, all really, really good. But you know, you do have your tough nuts to crack, and don't need to kind of like mention any names, but you know, like you just kind of like need to think about who's actually making the headlines as far as being the most resistant. And so once you identify that museum or those museums, then you understand it's like, okay, cool, because if they're difficult about talking about taonga, then they're definitely difficult about talking about kōiwi tangata, kōiwi and toimoko.
Without naming names, like what kind of a person.
Stop digging.
No, I'm not. I just want to know sort of the ahua of a person complexion that might have things like that in a private collection. Like, why? What is the motivation? Why would someone why do people want koi me taonga Māori in a private collection? What do they get from that? Do you have any insight into that mind?
I think it's a bit of a bit of a fetish, to be honest.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I've stalked certain well-known collectors, some of which have had TV programs about the fact that they collect human remains, and human remains of all kinds. And, yeah, I just think, you know, people that have a lot of money like to collect things, and sometimes they're beautiful things, and sometimes it's weird, and sometimes it's just plain wrong. But you know, we I guess we have a inclination, some people, you know, to be able to collect, and the more rare the object or the tūpuna, the more they're worth. And I think for me that is a worry, in terms of us bringing our tūpuna home, and particularly for moko moko or toi moko. We've been really successful in bringing those tūpuna home. But, you know, then you have things like private collectors, the black market, where the more we bring home, the less they are out there in the world, and so the more valuable they become. So that's a concern for me, and I don't really know how we deal with that. And I guess it's just the hopes that the work that Karanga Aotearoa is doing to, I guess, educate those types of people to say that, you know, we are a people who want our tūpuna home, and that we do not think they should be in collections, whether they be private or public. They can empathise with us, and you know, we have in the past have had private collectors contact us and want to return tūpuna. So, you know, but it's a hard one. It is a hard one. Yeah.
There have been situations, and Amber's mentioned it, when there are tūpuna held within private collections, and these are tūpuna that you know, people have inherited from estates. And then they discover the contents of these estates, and then they realise it's like, oh, shit.
Oh, imagine that as an inheritance.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know,
so often than you think.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought I was just getting some nice furniture, but, you know, next minute it's like, oh, hello, bones, and kōiwi. So, but, you know, like the thing that really, really helps with our mahi is that in quite a lot of situations, we do a lot of high-profile work, especially over with the Toimoko repatriation from the French Museum. museums back in those days. There was so much media activity, international media activity around those ones. Understand that things are very difficult to get back from the French, and so you know, like there's the news cycle, and so you know, like we had people in the US actually seeing that and saying, it's like, you know, I've inherited this this toimoko and this head, and I want to do the right thing and give it back. So as far as private collections go, it really depends on who owns their private collection.
And just touching on the French, you know, for them, taonga and tupuna, no matter where they're from, it's part of their cultural, their you know, cultural history, their cultural heritage. Yeah. And so they actually changed the law, their law, so that only toimoko or mokomokai could come home. And so that's a big thing for that country to change their
law. Huge for France. Oh, yeah. Especially moving the definition, because, like, you know, as Amber said, anything that's actually sits within an institution like a museum that receives federal funding is everything, is property of the French Republic. And it requires a piece of legislation that goes through the upper and lower house in the French government for them to actually come home.
Just on that, just as we're wrapping up, I'm going to throw you both a really hard question. What do you see as the future of many of these European institutions? You know, as you've touched on with the French, they see it as part of their identity. They're their taonga. I was reading something about, you know, there's a massive collection in Russia as well of taonga Māori, and that's some of their attitude as well, that it's, well, they want to tell their history. So what do you see as these institutions, what role can they play in your view, or should they play at all? Should they give it all back and say, hey, it's up to the original countries to tell these narratives? Hea o kōrua whakaaro.
I mean, at the moment, Europe, and I guess, maybe the whole world actually is going through some really hard thinking about decolonizing the museums. And I've been to a number of conferences over the years, or pre-COVID, where museums, particularly in Germany, are talking about decolonizing that space. And for me, that's really interesting, because I'm asking, well, who's doing the decolonizing? If you're within the German space, you know, who is decolonizing those museums, and what does that mean? So I think museums in general are really looking at their relevance. You know, what are they really there for? They're becoming a lot more open to creating meaningful relationships with the descendants of those taonga and those tupuna. You know, they actually are realizing that they are not necessarily the holders of that knowledge. And actually they want to proactively start reconnecting those communities back with their taonga. And actually, I guess it's a mutually beneficial thing for the museums. Of course, they want to be able to tell that story and put it in a wonderful exhibition. But actually, at the same time, they're actually proactively reconnecting those taonga back with those communities. And I think that's amazing. It's never going to be the way that we as Indigenous peoples, I think, we want and we think should happen. But there's definitely big movements happening, and we need to be part of that conversation. You know, we need to go to these conferences. We need to be voicing our whakaaro around how our taonga needs to be looked after and actually where they should reside. And people are starting to listen, which is amazing.
And where they should reside, I feel like that's really what I'm super interested in, is like, well, if they're willing to tell our stories, but do they still want to tell our stories from the Austrian Museum? What do you think, Te Ariki Rangi? Is it only necessary, like, do they need to be brought home for our stories to be told? Is that the end goal for you, is to maybe dismantle in a way? Maybe not dismantle, that means you'd be out of a job. But to bring all of these taonga home and tell them from Aotearoa, not tell our stories from overseas?
I think, you know, you touched on something. To be out of a job as far as repatriating kōrui tangata is actually the goal. that's actually the goal. We don't want to have to be keeping, we don't want to have to keep on searching for our tupuna to actually bring them home. But, you know, I think as museums are at a very, very interesting time at the moment. It's a bit of a tipping point for them because they're having to kind of like really look at themselves because there's been a lot of social change that has happened over the last 5 to 10 years. And they're actually exploring their relevance within their communities, within their nations, and within the world in general. And a lot of the traditional structures for museums is actually disintegrating underneath all of these cultural and social pressures there. And that involves all of the campaigning that Indigenous communities are doing. My hope for the future, and I think this is where Germany's, you know, and like who ever thought that we were going to be looking at Germany for examples for where the museums are actually heading. But they're actually really, really good. And the thing about them is that they're actually quite methodical in the way that they actually approach things. First, they're looking at any taonga and collections from the colonial context, and they're reaching out to those different communities that are connected to those and bringing them into the museum and developing those relationships. And the future for those particular relationships is actually a sharing partnership between taonga going home so that they could be reinterpreted, or in other situations, the Berlin Ethnographic Museum has also gone through a process of actually bringing in Pacific waka carvers to actually make waka for their exhibition spaces, which creates an avenue for them to actually send the waka that they had in their collections back home. And so there's this really interesting movement of things that's happening over in Germany. And so you know what? You know, hats off to the Germans.
No matter what these discussions with museums, they know that repatriation or returning of taonga is part of that conversation.
Yeah.
They know they can't engage with communities without having that conversation as well, which is great. In the past, they were too scared to even broach that because they didn't want to bring up the repatriation corridor.
I can imagine must be a really heavy, delicate process. But, yeah, amazing the work that you're both doing in this space to bring our people home and hopefully empty out more museums overseas.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Hey, well, tēnei te mihi nunui ki a kōrua. Ngā mihi mō kōrua mātauranga. Me te kaha o tō mahi, te whakahoki i o tātou tipuna ki Aotearoa anō. Tēnei te mihi me atu ki a kōrua. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Tēnā koutou.
Ka pai e te whanau. Well, that's near for another fortnight. Big mihi anō to our guests, Te Ariki Rangi, Mamaku Ironside, and Amber Aranui. Both hardworking, incredible kaimahi at Te Papa, doing the hard yards to bring our people home. Mihi to my co-hosts, Leonie Hayden and Te Kuru o Te Marama Jews. And of course to Tiahi Butler, who's here with us every fortnight, stitching all of our great kōrero together and making it sound rawe. Ka pai, you can listen to our podcast anywhere where you listen to your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, and we'll be back in another fortnight with another juicy episode for you to get your taringa stuck into. Hei aku nei!
Nair is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air and brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network. It was hosted and researched by Leonie Hayden with Te Kuru Jews and Mariana Johnson. Nair was produced by Te Aihe Butler with senior production from Jane Yee and project management from Mark Kelleher. Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.